Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Oh, what are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. We are continuing our series going into the books of Daggerfall, the very earliest in-game universe books that are part of the Elder Scrolls series. And we're taking a look at specific ones that are interesting for different reasons. Lotus this week pulled out a really cool book. It's called The Brothers of Darkness. This is a book that talks about the Brotherhood and the Morag Tong, which we've discussed in previous episodes, but to get a perspective on it from the earliest lore in the series that even brought this up. But also, Lotus, when you pulled this out, you didn't realize this initially, but as you and I researched this a little bit more, it turns out that the Daggerfall version of the book is different from the other versions that come after, from like Morrowind on, which is cool and weird, you know?
This was sort of like a happy accident, as this week I was trying to browse through and I was trying to see which one I wanted to cover. And I liked your idea of like, hey, let's reach back to some of the OG books from like, you know, Daggerfall and see how it established lore and then how that lore has changed or evolved as the series has gone on. Last week we had the fairy thing where it was like, oh, you know, this was kind of initially brought up and then never really addressed for 2 decades.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So there's some cool differences here between the original version of the book and then what came later. And of course, the details in the book and the early understanding of the Dark Brotherhood and the Morag Tong and all of that.
So right. It's a fun pick. I only kind of was referencing it from the Morrowind perspective of like, yeah, no, we, like you said, we've discussed this duality before where it's like, okay, well, the Morag Tong is similar but a little more structured than the Dark Brotherhood, and there's these other things. You can listen to that episode if you're interested in stuff like that. But I was just like, oh, it's kind of cool to see how this started. And then to your point, you ended up finding that it's like, this book's actually changed over time, so this is super on brand. I was like, beautiful, we'll pretend I planned that.
it was a happy accident. And so we're going to get into all the details, so welcome. We should call this Daggerfall Book Club.
Right, Daggerfall Book Club. I like it.
Yeah. So, well, welcome back to Daggerfall Book Club, Book 2, The Brothers of Darkness by Palarne Assi, PALLARNEASSI. Now, Lotus, I looked into this. Palarne Assi has only written this book and I guess revised it because is also the author of the revised version.
He apparently didn't like his own work.
Yeah, I guess so.
So changed it?
Yeah, I guess so. And again, this is another one of those names that I'm not really sure of the race. Do you have any speculation on Palarne Assi?
I was going to say that last name is killing me right now. So like, I'm guessing, I don't know. Are we going back to, is it a Seishi writing this? Like, are we doing something weird here?
Maybe. Like, I mean, these weird names, right? Palarne almost seems like Imperial. Assi seems foreign-ish, so Redguard-ish maybe.
Potentially be Redguard.
Not as vanilla as some of the other, you know, mannish races.
Right, yeah. Exactly. I don't know. It's hard to tell, especially in the older episodes of the series, just because some of these areas aren't even that fleshed out yet. So like,
yeah.
If somebody has an idea for something, like I was just joking, like, okay, what about a Seishi? Well, it's not super established just yet, some of the lore we have around that. So it could just be somebody's thoughts that then turned into it. It could be some undiscernible race that they didn't really elaborate on the time or have fully fleshed out.
Right. Just a fun name they picked because they weren't even really thinking about it. And
Correct. The
real world writer here is Ted Peterson. So this is a Ted Peterson authored actual, you know, out of lore book.
Yes, out of lore book.
But here, let's get into it because, and I've got a fun new feature. I've got, check this out. boop, the text pops up on the screen. Now you can read along if you're watching the video version.
I was going to say, a fun treat for the video.
Yeah. So here, I'm going to read it out. Of course, Lotus is going to chime in. We'll discuss each paragraph as we go. But here, let's start it off. As name suggests, the Dark Brotherhood has a history shrouded in obfuscation. Such a fun word. Their ways are secret to those who are not brothers of the order. Brothers in the generic term, some of the deadliest of the assassins are female, but they are called brothers as well. How they continue to exist in shadow, but can be easily found by those desperate enough to pay for their services, is not the least of their mysteries. So this kicks off our little story here. And yeah. I would imagine playing Daggerfall, you don't have the background we have with the Dark Brotherhood and understanding how all of that stuff works or any of that. So they have to clarify these little details about, like, they're all brothers, but women also.
Yeah, brothers in the general term, like they say. And the other thing that is kind of interesting is, because of time and place of Daggerfall, you got to keep in mind that a lot of the shadowy characters are just super emo. Like,
it was the 90s.
Yes, they're all edgelords and just all sorts of ridiculous stuff. Man of Marco, you can't even see his face. He's just shrouded in like a cloak. So
yeah, Jinko jeans and chain wallets.
Chain. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yep. Yep, all over the place.
I feel personally called
black
out.
Eyeliner.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, let's move on to the second paragraph, because things are going to get more interesting as we go. The Dark Brotherhood sprang from a religious order, the Morag Tong. Boom, right there in this book, in the second game in the series.
Yeah, this Dark Brotherhood planned right from the start, pretty much.
Right. Sprang from the Morag Tong during the second era. The Morag Tong were worshippers of the Daedric Spirit, Mephala, not Daedric Prince, Daedric Spirit, who encouraged them to commit ritual murders. In their early years, they were as disorganized as cultists usually are. There was no one to lead the group, and as a group, they dared not murder any of any importance. This changed with the rise of the Night Mother. Oh, Night Mother. any notes on this one?
I was going to say, I feel like we could bring in like a really annoying Cicero thing or something like that there, but then I won't want to listen to this.
Yes, true. Yeah, we would turn away like, I don't know, a good 30% of our listeners.
Yeah, and
like,
then there's always the Cicero apologists.
Yeah, we would make another 30% of our listeners super happy about that.
Yeah, but no, it's just kind of interesting because again, some of these, as we're talking about right out the gate with the opening two paragraphs, these have been organized pretty much set in stone right from the beginning. There are definitely some hard and fast things that have not changed. We'll get into the things that have shifted, but like right out the gate, it's just like this lore has started right from the beginning and lingered through the series.
Right. Immediately they descended from the Morag Tong. They sprang from the Morag Tong. It was in the second era. Mephala is connected, and there's a Night Mother.
Yes.
And they're going to get a little bit more into that as we go. But here, let's move on to the next paragraph. Whoop, it just moves on the screen. Isn't that fun? It's
lovely.
All leaders of the Morag Tong and then the Dark Brotherhood have been called the Night Mother. Notice the way this is phrased. It feels peculiar, right?
Yeah. Now, right out the gate, now this is going to start getting weird.
Yeah. Whether the same woman has commanded the Dark Brotherhood since the Second Era is unknown. What is believed is that the original Night Mother developed an important belief of the Morag Tong. And we'll go ahead and get the next paragraph and kind of summarize both of these. The first belief is that while Mephala grows stronger with every murder committed in her name, certain murders were better than others. Murders that came from hate pleased Mephala more than murders committed because of greed. Murders of great men and women pleased Mephala more than murders of unknowns. Thoughts on that one?
That's great. That's a real great tenet to have. It's just like, yeah, indiscriminate murder. No. You got to make these count. Like, and it's just like right at the gate, it comes with like a prestige setting to your murder, not just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Basically being psychopaths, which is kind of funny because the Dark Brotherhood tends to fall victim. And I always joke about that because I know people love the Dark Brotherhood and I think they're a cool faction, but they're not a faction that I personally am like in the games. I'm always like, meh, whatever. These are cool storylines more so than I want anything to do with these. Because they always kind of implode in on themselves because the people that are connected to this
are terrible.
All there.
There's, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So what a surprise that when they set up tenants, they don't always follow them. So
Right. It's also interesting here that Mephala ranks these in quality, like the quality of murders like for hate. Yeah, yeah. Like hate murders. She wants people to be angry and like upset and not greedy. That's not the point. The point.
Yeah, it's the wrong vice you're going for if you're going for greed.
Right, right. And then also the more important the people are, the better off, like the happier she is. Like it's one thing to murder the bum down on the road, but yeah, nobody knows about the bum, but you murder the emperor, you make Mephala real happy.
Right. Bigger risk, bigger reward type of deal in her eyes. The thing that's also interesting is just in general, I like the idea of like this tiered quote unquote level that the game, I mean, they're games, so they have this like leveling, and leveling is fun for a lot of people. And that weird concept is built into so many of the features of the world, where it's like, I joked about the Soul Gem thing that we had a whole episode on, and now it's just like, yeah, there's like level quality to the things you do in the world, and it actually matters, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Rob in chat says, you say hate, I say passionate murder. Yes, very, very nice. Very nice. There's also a discussion going on in chat that we can't really address because it's not part of this episode, but it's about Daedric Princes and if they even acknowledge that Sithis is a thing, if there's any, that's an interesting question. Maybe something worth digging into in the future.
I was going to say, that could be a fun episode.
Yeah.
But back on track.
We got to get back on track there. So let's continue on. We can approximate the time this belief was adopted with the first known murder committed by the Morag Tong. In the year 324 of the Second Era, the potentate Versidu Shai was murdered in his palace in what is today the Elsewhere Kingdom of Senchal. Interesting references that are still accurate. In a brash move, the Night Mother announced the identity of the murderers by painting Morag Tong on the walls of the with the potentate's blood. Notice it says the Night Mother announced the identity and painted on the walls, which feels so different than our interaction with the Night Mother in the games, or at least in the more recent games. I mean, can you picture the Night Mother from Skyrim getting out of the coffin and going and painting a wall and then getting back in the coffin?
Right, as is, if you don't, you know, hit her with the spray bottle, I feel like she's just going to, like, turn to dust. So it's like that same person not that far before is apparently getting out of this situation by not only murdering the potentate, but then, like, drawing a mural, essentially, like, graffiti tagging the wall with his blood. It's like,
that's
a pretty involved murder.
And only a few hundred years before the events of Elder Scrolls Online.
So, after, not before.
Oh, after, after.
Oh, No.
This event with Nightmother happened before Elder Scrolls Online hit after.
Yes, that's, yes. Just in case that was confusing, just because that's real jumping around on the timer. Correct.
Yeah, just to be clear, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, that's pretty close to like the timeline of some of the earliest, well, I guess the literal earliest that we play in the series. This is like dating back to that. So it's like, I mean, I guess if she's, well, I suppose that's enough time that you could rot in a coffin for a while. Very different view than we get in Skyrim, for say, which is many, many, many years later.
Right, right. Now, one of the big differences between this version of the story and this actual written account and the account in Morrowind later is that in this account, it's very clear that the Night Mother is a woman, like a person, a female person, right? And then in the redacted version of this story, as it shows up in Morrowind and all of the stories after this, it's actually very vague. The depiction of her is more of like, well, is she even really a person? And it becomes kind of a different thing altogether. How do you feel about that?
That's interesting because that's another thing that we see kind of, it's kind of like part of many aspects where you have almost a legend that builds for a character more than the character itself. We have it similar with the Gray Fox. It seems like it's also very similar with this. It's like, well, maybe it's just the legend of the Night Mother that needs to matter more so than the Night Mother.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, right.
And It's interesting because it seems like that's a real governing thing. It's something, you know, it's hard when we deal with really old legends in the real world. It's like, well, how much of this is actually true? How did we consolidate three different stories into one to make it sound like there's one superhuman hero type of thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
How much of this is actually done and then how it evolves over time is kind of an interesting theory because oftentimes it's just like, well, it's the legend that needs to matter because that's what will, I don't know if I'd say inspire with the Dark Brotherhood or Morrigan, but sure, we'll say inspire.
Right, right. Now, one of the details that is the same is the fact that both of these account the writing of Morrigan on the wall using the Potentate's blood to the Night Mother. But there's more vagaries in the more recent version about what even is the Night Mother.
What exactly? Because again, it's just like, and this is, you know, a pretty big step because it's such a high profile murder, which we were just talking about, mattering to Mafala.
Right. Yes. And that's
get much higher up than a potentate.
Right. Right. This is a very high level official. And it seems like the Night Mother wanted everyone to know it was the Morrigan who did it. So.
Yeah, not so much in the shadows if you're spray painting it on a wall.
Right, right. All right, well, let's continue the story. We've got this part. Previous to that time, the Morrigan existed in relative peace, like a witch's coven, occasionally persecuted, but usually ignored. In a remarkable synchronicity, like the Police album, at a time when the arena was a fractured land, notice the arena there, the Morrigan was outlawed throughout the continent. Every sovereign gave the cult's elimination his highest priority. Nothing more was officially heard of them for 100 years. So in this version, Tamriel is still called the Arena, just like in the very first Elder Scrolls game, Arena, which is the name of, they've justified it as, and we've talked about this before. Originally, the game was designed to be kind of like an arena battle game, and then they expanded it out to this open world setting of this entire continent, and then they called the continent
full RPG.
Right, yeah, and then they're like, okay, well, the continent is called Arena, the arena, because it's everyone's just fighting each other, and life is so terrible and difficult.
Super brutal.
And violent.
All this stuff. Yeah. And then it just sort of became a nickname, and it's actually called Tamriel.
Right. So that is one of the changes between this version and the next version is that in the second version, it's not the arena. In fact, they redacted that on purpose for Morrowind, which kind of conveys the idea that they're backing out of the idea that anybody called Tamriel the arena at all, or at least at the timing of this writing in the second era, it was no longer being called that.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing that they've gently nudged out of the picture as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's continue on. We've got this next paragraph. This is a bigger one. It is more difficult to date the era when the Morrigan reemerged as the Dark Brotherhood. Notice the direct line there. They disappeared as the Morrigan reemerged as the Dark Brotherhood, which feels not completely accurate to the bigger picture of the lore anymore.
Right. Because at several points, we know for a fact that the Dark Brotherhood and the Morrigan exist at the same time and occasionally kind of come into conflict.
Right, right. Assassin guilds have sporadically appeared throughout the history of Tamriel. The first mention of the Dark Brotherhood that I have found is from the journals of the Blood Queen. Oh, here we go. Arlimahera of Hegeth. She spoke of slaying her enemies by her own hand or, if necessary, with the help of the Night Mother and her Dark Brotherhood, the secret arsenal my family has employed since my grandfather's time. Arlimahera wrote this in the second era 412. So one can surmise that the Dark Brotherhood had been in existence, misspelled, since the at least 360, if her grandfather truly used them. So a few little differences here. The spellings are fixed in the newer version, which would make sense if somebody wrote this and they redacted what they wrote and they wanted to just fix some accidental misspellings, right? So in universe, that kind of makes sense. But this is interesting, this idea that like, that there's not just, it's not so much that the Dark Brotherhood just kind of are a broken splinter group of the Morrigan. It's almost like they disappeared as one thing because, I don't know, they got a bad rap and then reemerged as something like they rebranded, like in modern terms.
That's what I was about to say. It's like a rebranding. It's like, ooh, that it's one of those things when like Comcast generally had such a bad, you know, reputation that they tried to sort of blend into like, hey, no, we're Xfinity now type of deal.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of funny because it's like, well, I think people might still know that you're the same thing, and it's not all removed. So there's still some traces of it, but it's kind of funny. Like, the rebranding ideas is kind of a funny way of putting exactly what they did.
Yeah, like the DCEU becoming the DCU.
Right, right.
Yeah, like, everyone didn't like those movies, Morag Tong. Try again.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay, so the Potentate was too much? All right, let's rein it back in. We'll show back up later. We'll try something a little low-key for a while, and then we'll go for an Emperor and really mess things up in the Fourth Era.
Yeah, absolutely. I also like here how the writer isn't 100% sure. We talk about this all the time also.
Yes.
That everybody is an unreliable narrator, but even in this document itself, the person writing the document is speculating. They're going, well, there seems to be a reference in 412, and she said that the Dark Brother had been in existence during her grandfather's time, so that would date it back to at least 360, so, but we don't really know. It's kind of like we're looking back on history from a much later point, trying to put the pieces together, which is how real-world old documents work.
Yeah, you don't just get a clear answer. You really do kind of have to piece it together with what you've got is at your disposal.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's continue. Here we go. The important distinction between the Dark Brotherhood and the Morag Tong was that the Brotherhood was a business as much as a cult. Rulers and wealthy merchants now used the order as an assassin's guild. The Brotherhood gained the obvious benefits of a profitable enterprise, as well as the secondary benefit that no longer could rulers actively persecute them. They were needed. Even an extremely virtuous leader would be unwise to maltreat the Brotherhood, which seems pretty obvious because as a financial enterprise, you could just get paid to then take them out, like, right? Like, if you don't placate them or try to play nice, then it wouldn't be too hard for someone to just be like, yep, off that guy.
Right.
So
yeah, it's definitely a ruling by fear approach.
Right. But as we know, Mephala didn't like the greed version of this as much as the hate version.
Yes.
So I would imagine this is implying that the Dark Brotherhood isn't as much in Mephala's good graces as they could have been if they weren't like basically a business enterprise.
Correct. And if you've played some of the games, you're very aware of how business oriented the Dark Brotherhood actually is. Mm-hmm. They seem like just whacked out, like lunatics that are killing people. And yes, that's true to a degree, but once you get into some of the quest lines, it's like, oh, wow, this is okay. This is a business just like anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me wonder this combination of business and cult. I'm trying to think of other. I mean, I guess we could get real dark and speculate about like real world examples. But the definition of cult is different to different people, depending right, on if you believe that something's a cult or not, depending on your own personal beliefs.
That's fair.
But I feel like that's we could speculate about real world assassins. I don't want to go there, but the idea of a business profiting from their moral or immoral, depending on your perspective, cultish beliefs.
Yeah. Seems, yeah, no, for sure.
Seems very credible. Seems very, very possible.
It doesn't seem completely out of the realm of possibility, especially when you can get somebody passionate about something, or if they're already passionate about it, and you can link it to something that would benefit you directly.
Mm-hmm.
That's mm-hmm. generally a way of like, okay, well, if we'll just use Astrid, for example, as like one of the most well-known Dark Brotherhood people who's leading stuff. And it's like, well, if she wants to turn a profit, for example, and she can make that connection with somebody, and then she basically uses them for her business venture, you can get that connection where it's just like, okay, well, this is just it. This is a thing, you know, somebody's passionate about like being a serial killer or something really screwed up like that. And then you utilize that from a, hey, how can I make money out of this? Well, they're getting what they want. And at the same time, she would theoretically be getting what she wants as well. And you have a pretty strong bond there that is pretty cultish, but it has this other layer of like organization and business aspect to it.
Yeah, I also, when you think about the events of the Dark Brotherhood in games like Oblivion or Skyrim. Yep. I can see how there could be absolutely tensions between the business aspect, the personal wants and motivations of the individual members, and then what the Night Mother wants. That seems to be a regular kind of storyline, is that all of those agendas don't, in fact, often don't line up.
Yeah, they're frequently at odds.
Yeah, yeah. So, and we have the origins of that in this document, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right, let's continue on. We got two paragraphs left. Not long after Alimahara's journal entry about them, I always get stumble over these names, was penned, came perhaps the most famous series of executions in the history of the Dark Brotherhood. Here we go. The Kolovian Emperor Potentate, Severian Chorak, and every one of his heirs was murdered on one bloody night in Sun's Dawn in 430. Within a fortnight, the Kolovian dynasty, I'm pointing that out for a reason, we'll get to it in a minute.
We'll get to that in a second.
The Kolovian dynasty crumbled to the delight of its enemies for over 400 years until the age of Tiber Septim. Chaos reigned over Tamriel. Though no comparable expressive executions have been recorded, the Brotherhood must have grown fat with gold during that age. Now, if we go to the other version of this, it tells a different story. These are not Kolovian potentates. These are Akaviri emperor potentates. The name right. is the same. It's Saverian Chorak.
Sure.
And the dates are the same. It talks about the warrior emperor, Tiber Septim. But and then it also mentions the interregnum. But other than that, it is the same story. It's the core concept here is that the Dark Brotherhood managed a massive murder of an extremely powerful individual and everybody else who was associated with that person.
Right. Basically just completely obliterating that lineage entirely.
Right. But it went from Kolovian to Akaviri. And we know that the Kolovian control of the empire was a thing. But then there was also this Akaviri control of the empire, which was also a thing during the Second Age.
Right.
And goes right up to the events of Elder Scrolls Online. And if this document hadn't been redacted, then that story would be very different. It wouldn't be Akaviri emperors. It would be or emperor potentates. It would be Kolovian emperor potentates.
Which seems a little less weird. Like, it's strange that it got weirder.
It got weirder. Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, the Akaviri aren't even from the same continent.
Right.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Very interesting change to the lore on that one, where it's just kind of like, you know, what? I guess since you have the disparity on things, but it brings into question, which one is the case, I guess? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. I would leave.
Well, I think the lore is now officially Akaviri because other documents line up with that and they've continued with that more, change.
But it's just like one of those things where there's so much speculation in the series and ambiguity. It's kind of interesting just because we get these edits that happen. And if you really want to like play into the lore of the thing, it's like, well, okay, was that changed for a reason, or is that because it was just a mistype, or, you know, there's more to that. I like that change quite a bit.
Yeah, and they specifically are pointing out in the updated version that this was during the interregnum, not just during the age, the Second Age, during the interregnum, the period where there was no emperor and everyone was vying for control, which is the whole story of ESO, basically. So, but that goes all the way back to Morrowind, but it kind of implies that was worth pointing out for the stories that they were working on from Morrowind on in order to tie all of that together, but also that they didn't have the idea of the interregnum necessarily, may or may not have, during the time of Daggerfall.
Now, I actually didn't tell you about this one in advance, so I'll see what your thoughts are on this.
It's a secret? A surprise?
Yeah, you're usually the one to throw out these wacky, zany, like...
Like theories, hey, like lore theories? Yeah.
So yeah. Here's my theory.
Nice.
At the end of Daggerfall was our first introduction to a dragon break. because they needed to tie in all the endings of your choices, because there were seven endings, if I'm remembering correctly.
I feel like that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's seven endings to Daggerfall. What if that change happened as a result of the Dragon Break? What if it might have been one thing in one timeline and a different one in a different timeline?
Huh. I don't know. I'd have to look through the different changes and what, yeah, like,
because of where it falls in the series. I was like, it changes after that decision was made to introduce the concept of Dragon Breaks.
I wonder, as we go, and this is fun to do, because I don't know of any other creators who have done the idea of like going back and looking at the Daggerfall versions of these stories and then looking at later versions. I wonder, as we continue through our Daggerfall book club, as we get to these other stories, if we're going to see other things that might help support that theory, that like the Dragon Break at the end of Daggerfall and the understanding what that means in the context of the greater picture of the lore and history created a need to make these changes in these books in Morrowind, which also kind of creates that this weird idea of what's the theory where like the Berenstain Bears thing, where people go, like, they think back and they're like, as a child, it was Berenstain Bears, but it's Berenstain Bears, the Mandela effect, right? Is there a real world Mandela effect thing happening, like, in this fictional world? Like, is that something?
That's really
makes
funny.
You wonder. Makes you wonder. Yeah. Yeah. And as we've talked about before, they started fleshing out a lot of these theories during the development of Daggerfall, but it really wasn't until the time between Daggerfall and Morrowind that the version of the lore that seems much more commonly upheld as canon was really solidified by the team and kind of expanded on. So what if these things are redactions just from a creator standpoint? Just go like, no, we would rather have this be the story. And what are other things that maybe actually in world changes, you know, like actually redacting a book because the writer needed to update it because something crazy happened, like a Dragon Break? That's a really interesting question.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. One last paragraph. This is how it ends. The Dark Brotherhood has no shortage of business opportunities. And accounting, I have been informed, is the Brotherhood's favorite euphemism for an execution. I love that. You have to pay your accountant. You know what I mean? While they're officially considered an unlawful organization in every corner of the empire, like the Thieves Guild, they are almost as universally tolerated. Period. Done. End of story. I love. Can you think of any examples of when they've said like accounting instead of execution in any of the more recent games?
I feel like that's sanitation worker instead of garbage man, just like in execution terms.
Right. But also like that would mean that you're hiring an accountant. Like your blood ritual would be playing the like paying the accountants. Like why is there like a heart on the ground with bones and weird candles? And I just had to pay the accountant. Don't worry about it.
If you're paying in blood is a term people use.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Or, you know, being, you know, bleeding because of expenses. Whew. All right. So there you go. Any other thoughts on this? The Brothers of Darkness?
No, I love that most of this has been just like set in stone from the beginning with just interesting little adaptations as the series has gone on.
Yeah, it's also interesting because there are still changes between the versions from Morrowind onward. It's a subtle thing. For example, the very last paragraph only shows up in the Morrowind and ESO version, but was left out of the Oblivion and Skyrim version. That was the paragraph I just read about the Dark Brotherhood. No shortage of business opportunities, accounting, being tolerated like the Thieves Guild, that kind of thing. So it's curious. I also don't know why you would just choose to pull that paragraph out of a version Oblivion.
Why that paragraph specifically later in the series?
Right, because I don't feel like any of that is incorrect, even if they didn't make any specific character say accounting for execution, you know, swapping the terminology. It doesn't mean you need to pull a paragraph out of a book. So I don't really have a theory about why that would happen, but it is something else to note.
Yeah. And just like how how many parts are added or subtracted based on game, not even necessarily based on game in any specific order, is what makes this such an interesting book.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that's Brothers of Darkness by Polarni Asi. And we will continue on with our book club next week. But let's take a quick break. We've got to go thank our patrons. We've got a random page, which I haven't even clicked on yet. We're going to find out what that is. And so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn. You are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
I got another. Didn't expect this. I guess I never expect the random page. That's how this works. That's how random works. But real quick, welcome to the Patreon to Britta MK, who signed up this last week. Welcome, welcome aboard. Hope you're enjoying your ad-free episodes. There's all sorts of stuff you can get on the Patreon, including, of course, the ad-free episodes. There's also the video version goes up as both a video version and an audio version. So however you want to listen to it as a podcast on a podcast feed that also shows up on Spotify, then you'll have access to that. Or if you just want to watch the videos without having to deal with YouTube video, like ads or any of that stuff, it's all there on Patreon if you want to sign up for relatively cheap. I mean, it's pretty well discounted. And then you can also get t-shirts and stickers and join us for our patron chat, which is coming up in just a week on the 28th, a week from when we are recording this right now on Thursday, the 28th at 9 p.m. Eastern. So if you sign up now, you'll still have time to join us and help pick out the topic that we're going to cover. And let's see, we've got some Daedric Princes to shout out every week. Our Daedric Prince tier patrons, Austin B., Blinding Vision, Hersine, Kirasi, and Peter R., thank you so much for your continued support. We really do appreciate it. And Hersine's in chat. Hi, Hersine.
Hey, Hersine.
And if you'd also like to help us out with a review, leave a review or a comment. Just leave a nice comment. You can comment on Spotify. You can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And if you do it over there in the US, we'll read it out on a future episode. Don't have any new ones this week, but if you do so, then you'll get read out on the next episode. But Lotus, are you ready for the random lore page?
I am, but I want to give a quick shout out to Berg real quick, because I think this is really funny when we were discussing the euphemisms for things. Mm-hmm. And in mob terms, to have somebody be an interior decorator, I feel like interior decorator just screams of like gut gardens in the series as is.
I bet Mafalo's real happy about gut gardens. Yeah.
Anyway, so random page.
Random page. All right, this is under lore, so that's fun. Appendices, Guild Act. This, here, I'll just read it.
Okay.
The Guild Act of the Second Era, 321, same time frames that we were been talking
super
about.
Super on brand.
Yeah. Also known as the Guilds Act, was a legislative act that codified the practice of guilds throughout the Second Empire, encouraged by Peladil Dereni and signed by Potentate Versidu Shai. In the Second Era, 321, a name that already showed up in this episode, the Guild
before
Act.
Before
he got shanked, officially sanctioned the guilds of tinkers, cobblers, prostitutes, scribes, architects, brewers, vintners, weavers, rat catchers, furriers. Cooks, astrologers, healers, tailors, minstrels, barristers, and most importantly, the Guild of Mages, founded in the Second Era 230 by Vanis Galarian, and the Guild of Fighters, founded the previous year by the Potentate's kinsman, Dineras Vess, and chartered under the Section 4 of the Guild Act. It goes on and talks about more of the details about this Guild Act, but it's interesting. Notice what is not included in here is something like the Dark Brotherhood, which is kind of like a guild, or the Thieves Guild, not mentioned.
Right. Guild adjacent.
Guild adjacent and that kind of stuff, because those were tolerated but not official. Weird. I promise I just hit the random page. It's not like I didn't even know about the Guild Act until I saw this pop up when I hit random page. So there you go again.
I did know about this, and this is very on brand for our Daggerfall sub-series here.
Yeah. Yeah. So it talks about how like the Mages Guild was briefly had their charter revoked. Because of the Soul Burst. Yes. Okay. This does sound familiar. We have talked about this a little tiny little bit, but it's been a while.
In passing.
Yep. So there you go. The Guild Act is our random page. Who knew? I mean, this stuff is it's always a surprise. It's always a surprise when you hit that button. I'm going to hit the button one more time just to see what we get real fast. Velothi Painting, Classic Volcano.
No, very, that is random.
It's a very beautiful painting you can put up in your house in ESO. But that's going to do it for this episode. I hope you're enjoying our Daggerfall book club. Lotus, I know you've got stuff going on with Tales of Tamriel.
Yeah, we actually just released an episode. Update 47 just came out on PC. I get it in a little less than 2 weeks at this point. We get it on September 3rd on console. But yeah, if you're interested in all the news related to that, and we had a really ridiculous side tangent where we went back into Elder Scrolls Castles last episode. Bet you didn't remember that game exists, because we kind of didn't.
Yeah, that's the mobile game.
Yeah, we had a request to bring back that segment, so we did.
Nice. I haven't played that in 6 months.
Yep, let's just say we had neither, so it was real interesting firing them both back up on stream.
That's funny, because you and I were talking in the pre-show about like the crazy stuff going on in our lives. I'm spending a lot of time just waiting in car line to pick up my son from school, and I was thinking today and earlier this week, I was like, is there a game on my phone I should just be playing while I sit here? Maybe I'll have to load Castles back up.
Maybe play something else.
Not so good, huh?
It's not... really struggle to call that an Elder Scrolls game.
Yeah. All right. Well, there
not
you go.
Not the best work.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you have some very exciting things to say about it on Tales of Tamriel. So go check that out. Also, if you want more of my stuff, I do a bunch of shows and follow the Lorecast, the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. I'm working on a new project that's yet to be announced that I'm super excited about. More info about that in future weeks. And of course, lots of other shows on the network, robotsradio.net for all of those shows. And just join us on the Discord. There's a whole list of channels for each of the shows. There's, if you're looking for more content, things to listen to while at work, if you're, while you're waiting for our next episode or something like that, go look. There's a whole bunch of things, lots of fun stuff. But thank you everybody for being here. Chat, thanks for being here as well. And until next time, if you're going to murder somebody, do it with hate, because Mephalo will enjoy that way more than for greed.
Also apparently charge for it, but don't be greedy about it.
Don't be, charge a fair price.
Yes. A fair murder prices only, people.
I'm not sure how much murders are going, like what the standard pricing for murders is right now, but yeah.
Please don't listen to anything we say.
Yeah, don't do any of that. That's terrible. And now we're going to get demonetized. All right, we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
See you later.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this. And join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.